Welcome to the Visceral Voice Podcast. I'm your host, Christine Schneider. Every 2 weeks on this podcast, I talk with voice specialists, manual therapists, health specialists, psychotherapists, movement practitioners, and professional voice users about voice science, function, medication, movement, puberty and aging, and everything in between. I am on a quest not only to become a better manual therapist, but also to learn everything I can about the living, breathing body and its intricate connection to the voice. This podcast documents the continuation of my learning and my experience as a professional singer, a nutritional consultant, and a manual therapist. Join me every 2 weeks as we strive to provide current, knowledgeable, creative, and compassionate information to help restore, regain, and create happiness and success in your vocal journey.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the podcast. Today, I'm talking with Amanda DeBoer on ingressive phonation. I'm very excited about this episode. It is a topic that I am very passionate about. I really love ingressive singing. I just randomly will do it throughout my day, and it is so much fun. So I was really excited when Amanda said that she would join me on this interview today. She wrote her dissertation on ingressive singing. I found out about Amanda through Tony Arnold, who you just heard on the podcast a couple weeks ago. And I was really excited to chat with her. So I hope that you enjoy this episode. If you haven't checked out our website at www.theviscerolvoice.com, please go ahead and do so. We are having so much fun and a lot of classes coming up, a lot of workshops coming up, anatomy classes coming up in the new year, level one anatomy around the larynx, level two anatomy around the pelvis, and soon level three with the respiratory system. So please check that out. Check out our events with master teachers as well as random workshops that I give as well. Some exciting ones coming up before the end of this year. And if you listen to this podcast on your mobile device and listen on the Apple Podcast, if you would be willing to rate and write a review, we would be so incredibly grateful. That really helps get the podcast in front of other people, more eyes and ears, and also helps with the potential of getting some sponsorship. So we really appreciate your rating and your review. Thank you so much for your consideration on that. Today's episode is brought to you by Fontis Lozenges. Fontis Lozenges provide moisturizing relief from dryness with a unique formula that stimulates saliva production to assist with dry mouth as well as the recovery of hoarse or strained vocal cords. Fontis offers a unique blend of green apple extract and glycerin to assist in saliva production and Manuka honey, which contains antibacterial and anti-inflammatory properties to promote healing. Fontis were made with love by Caitlin Hopkins to help anyone who needs relief and is suffering from dry mouth. If you are interested in purchasing Fontis lozenges, please feel free to contact me at The Visceral Voice. We have three sizes, a 20 count, a 50 count, and a 150 count. You can get a hold of me at thevisceralvoice@gmail.com. Without further delay, here is my conversation on ingressive phonation with Amanda DeBoer. Hi, Amanda. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi.
Thank you so much for joining me. I am absolutely thrilled to have you on because I really want to learn more about ingressive phonation. So I'm just so thrilled. I got your name from Tony Arnold, who said you absolutely, if you haven't already interviewed Amanda, you need to contact her. And so I'm so thrilled that she gave me your name to have this conversation. Thanks for being here.
Yes, definitely. Thanks for having me.
So Amanda, can you talk to us a little bit about your journey into becoming a performer, an artist, and a teacher?
Yeah, I grew up in Omaha, Nebraska, and as soon as I discovered theater, I think it must have been a junior high summer camp situation, I was all in as a theater kid. I played piano and clarinet before that. Then I decided to study music in college and pretty quickly kind of fell in with the composers and folks of the chamber music ilk while I was at DePaul. And so that to me was really exciting because I was able to work with composers on new pieces that they were writing for me. And I helped start a new music ensemble at DePaul. They didn't have one at the time, and produced a new opera while I was there. So, you know, as soon as I found contemporary music and realized that I could help create new pieces, that's what I wanted to dedicate my life to.
Ooh.
And at first it wasn't so much about trying new sounds of the voice and exploring extended techniques. That kind of came later, especially after I started working with Tony Arnold. But it was a lot of fun to watch these new things come into the world. And so, yeah, as soon as I was done with my undergrad, I went to study with Tony at Buffalo. And she was an incredible mentor to me and helped me discover new aspects of my voice that I didn't even know were available to me, but also in a weird way helped me to reclaim my love of country music and folk music at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
It was a big journey of self-discovery during my master's degree. And so like my master's recital was a bunch of John Cage and Woody Guthrie. And then there was this new fellowship that had started at Bowling Green State University in Ohio, where you could get a fellowship to study contemporary music. So then I went there, and it was much more self-directed while I was there. Although I worked with an incredible vocal teacher, Dr. Jane Rogers, and she specializes in opera, and she really helped me understand the mechanics of the voice in a new way. That's where I learned the sort of nitty gritty of pedagogy. And I worked with an incredible researcher, Dr. Ron Scherer, and that's who I worked on my dissertation with. So I kept sort of getting more and more specialized into the contemporary music, into the voice pedagogy of extended techniques. And that's been my journey. And the whole time, always interested in starting my own thing. And so I've started festivals. I currently run a festival in Omaha, and I am part of two self-produced groups, Quinn's Contemporary Vocal Ensemble, Ensemble Daliente. And then I have a vocal duo or a guitar voice duo called Hasco Duo that we write songs and improvise together. So that's where I am today. I have these self-produced projects, and I work with composers and focus on creation of new works.
Mm, that is so great. And so you wrote your dissertation on ingressive phonation. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. And so how did you get interested in ingressive singing?
As is typically the case with a lot of research projects, I started out with a much more broad topic. I was going to write about every extended technique and all the pedagogy. Now, you know, and my very wise advisors said, maybe you should focus a little more. And so I started discussing with Dr. Scherer about different topics that I could focus on within that. And he knows the literature. He's very, very involved in the voice science world. And he said, I don't think I've seen a lot of research on ingressive singing and ingressive phonation. In fact, I don't think there's a musical study on that. So there are studies on ingressive phonation, but they're more from a speech pathology perspective.
Mm.
There aren't, as far as I knew, and at the time, there weren't any studies that worked with professional singers, certainly not professional singers who specialize in contemporary techniques.
Mm-hmm.
So he said that that might be a good path just because it's something that doesn't exist yet. It might be a way to break new ground. So that's how we ended up working with ingressive phonation. And it turned out to be this really fascinating topic. And so many composers work with ingressive phonation, but there was so little known about it at the time. And I think it's still a very under-researched topic because we did a quote unquote study, but I was the only subject. So obviously that's, every voice is so different. So I think it's really still, there's so much to be learned about the technique.
Yeah. And so can you talk to us about the timbral qualities and how and or why someone might choose to use inward singing?
When you hear inward singing, it maybe sounds noisy or hooty or unstable. And that can be an interesting end in and of itself. I think some composers like to work with it because of the instability in that. And that seems like an interesting quality to exploit in their music. And for some composers, they might want to work with it because of the circular nature of it. Like Joan LaBarbera has a piece called Circular Song, which she performs on an 8.5-minute rendition in which she never stops singing. So she's singing outward and then inward and sort of alternating between the two techniques for 8.5 minutes straight, which is quite a feat in and of itself. So what's happening during inward singing to give it that unique kind of hooty, noisy quality is several parameters. First of all, is that when you're inhaling, the larynx is trying to give you the most efficient setup to bring the most oxygen in as possible. So the cricothyroids want to engage and separate, they want to abduct so that they can create more space in the airway. The larynx naturally lowers. All of these things are adjusting in the larynx so that you can inhale. So when you're bringing the vocal folds together, you're actually resisting the natural tendency of the larynx to want to create space for the airway. So there's this interesting resistance. On top of that, the larynx is kind of, the vocal folds form almost a shelf at the upper edge of the larynx. They're formed to create efficiency for the air to move outward from the lung. So it creates like a tapered, nice tapered shape for the air to move outward efficiently, but inward, it's not so efficient because the upper edge is sort of shelf-like and it's resisting coming together as you sing inwardly. So it's not necessarily an efficient way to sing. Mm-hmm. But the other aspects are that we tend to have less contact during inward phonation. So the vocal folds are not touching as much, which means more air is moving through them, moving through the vocal folds as we phonate. So you get sort of an airier quality, especially in men, you might have like a posterior glottal chink, which means there's just like a little space and the vocal folds might not be vibrating evenly. So you get almost an aperiodic noisy quality to the sound. So all of these factors are impacting the sound. And with the larynx naturally lowering, it just puts it into a different position, which is changing the sort of pharyngeal shape, which affects the resonance. And I might even just demonstrate if that's okay.
That'd be great.
So I'll just sing a random pitch and I'll move between egressive and ingressive phonation. So you can hear the difference in quality as I'm singing inward. Mm-hmm. What's happening from a resonance standpoint is that the first and second formant are actually pretty similar, when I was performing them at least, between the ingressive and egressive phonation. But the third and fourth formant, which really define the singing sound, that they are wildly different. They're much less pronounced in the ingressive phonation. They might sort of happen in a different register. And then in terms of harmonics and the sort of upper partials of the sound, in a typical vocal sound, you really want powerful harmonics, you know, between 3,000 and 4,000 hertz. But with the ingressive phonation, you almost lose the resonance above 2,000 hertz. It's almost not present. So you don't get that sparkly, shiny resonance that you would in an egressive outward sound. Although as I practice these techniques, I could sort of get that resonance in if I, you know, shaping my sinus cavity and, you know, just all the things that you might do during outward singing. As I practiced that, it improved, but it was not nearly as strong still.
Mm-hmm. So what techniques are possible with ingressive singing?
There's what I was just doing. So there's typical sort of pitched sustained singing. And you can do scales and all of those things that you might do during egressive phonation. Some of the things that happen more naturally almost during ingressive phonation are vocal fry and noisy sounds are almost more easy during the ingressive phonation. And that might be because of more pressure in the vocal folds. Like it takes more effort to adduct the vocal folds. So you can like really create that pressure that's required for vocal fry. And maybe because of that sort of shelf-like upper edge that creates a different sort of contact during the ingressive phonation, it's not quite clear. But also vocal fry happens more naturally when the larynx is lower. So maybe because of the lower larynx during ingressive phonation. Vibrato doesn't naturally happen during ingressive phonation, but you can create a wobble effect. It's almost like a tremolo when you're singing ingressively. You can do glissandi and all of those types of things. And then alternation is something that I see in contemporary music. So going back and forth between the two and creating that contrasting effect with the technique. And you can do multiphonics ingressively. You can whistle ingressively. I personally cannot whistle ingressively, but I hear that one can potentially whistle ingressively. So those kinds of techniques are the things that I see people using the most. Mm-hmm. The things that don't necessarily always work are certain consonants don't work ingressively. Like an S, you need the turbulence of the tongue against the teeth, creating turbulence outwardly against the hard surface of the teeth is what really, and the alveolar ridge, that's what defines an S. So you just can't create the same amount of turbulence ingressively. So it's really hard to create a convincing S. And so sometimes when you perform different words, different text ingressively, it's not as understandable.
Sure. So what would be reasons to integrate ingressive singing into teaching applications?
That was actually one of the more interesting things that we were able to research. Practitioners have used ingressive phonation to address issues like hyperfunction issues, such as spasmodic dysphonia or ventricular phonation, things of that nature in speech pathology situations. So because of the natural tendency of the cricothyroid dominant production in inward singing, it creates a lighter adduction for some people who have hyperfunctioning issues. Mm. Naturally, the vocal folds have less contact during ingressive phonation. So that can be, I have found in a singing context, a useful addition in training for folks who have kind of a hyper-adducted vocal production, people who experience vocal fatigue, especially because of that. So what we'll do in those lessons is not necessarily a specific passage of pitches, at least not at first, on ingressive phonation. We might just do some very lightly pitched inhalations, some sort of inward sounds, and then immediately switch to an egressive phonation just to allow them to feel a lighter production. And that's been interesting for some folks because they can't hyperadduct during ingressive phonation. It's maybe the first time that they've felt a lighter production. Mm-hmm. And for some folks, it actually helps them to discover their head voice, since it's almost impossible to create a thyroarytenoid dominant production ingressively. So that has been a really interesting use. And since the larynx naturally lowers during ingressive phonation, it's also good for laryngeal placement. It's not something that I would want to overuse in a lesson because, you know, there are potential of sort of drying out the voice if you're inhaling too quickly, too much air all at once, things like that, which you can mitigate by inhaling, doing ingressive phonation on like an M or an N to kind of block the airway in that way. But it's just a tool to create a new physicality for people. And I've also found that sometimes just creating a different sort of physical sensation during phonation is enough to maybe jolt someone out of their habits. Yeah. And that can be useful for people who tend to get kind of locked into a really rigid sense of phonation, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it definitely makes sense. You mentioned drying out, and sometimes ingressive singing could be a little controversial. At least some people, some teachers might have some concerns about it. What would you say with all of your research and study and teaching and use of it in regards to these vocal health concerns?
I absolutely hear that and understand that. And I think with any technique and any kind of singing, it requires an understanding of your voice and an understanding of how the body functions. You don't want to dive into anything full force immediately. So when I was exploring the technique, I would get tired more quickly because it's a different way of using the muscles. Mm-hmm. So I would start slowly and try gentle techniques, a breathier technique with the mouth covered so that things don't dry out. Gentle onsets, non-glottal onsets. I would definitely start with a breathy onset at first. Onsets are one of the difficulties of ingressive phonation because of the configuration of the vocal folds. And, you know, use middle portions of the range. Don't do anything too loud, too long. And this really applies, I think, to any extended technique or learning anything new that requires something new of your technique. Is to start slowly, smaller chunks of time, and do the most gentle version of that technique at first. So when I'm working with someone new who might benefit from ingressive singing, or they're working on a contemporary piece that requires it, I would say start with just some inward breathing with light phonation, like things like that we actually all do in speaking, expressive sounds that we tend to all make. You know, if you're in traffic and someone cuts you off, you might gasp. So these are sounds that we do make naturally in our language. But what I think people don't always do is, you know, when you put something into a singing context, you're prolonging something or doing it at a more intensity than you would in speaking. So starting slowly, doing the most gentle version of the technique, and it might not be for everyone. That's okay. I guess maybe this is my little soapbox moment here. I get really frustrated with what I call abstinence-only vocal education. And that's, to me, an approach that really limits what a singer is able to explore and experiment with. If you tell someone, well, it might be unsafe, so never try it, then that's going to potentially limit their artistry, limit what they understand about their voice. So I would say with anything new like this, try it out. And if it feels uncomfortable, stop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I am super interested in this topic because I love ingressive singing.
Really?
For as long as I can remember, I've done it.
Really? Oh, we gotta get you into a study.
I mean, I don't do it professionally, but I'll do it around the house.
Oh, so does your vibrato occur naturally during ingressive phonation?
It does.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Wow, you have such a beautiful, clear sound. And it's really one of my biggest regrets is that we didn't do a larger study because it was only me in the study. And so it's like during ingressive phonation, this happens. Well, it happens with me, but clearly it doesn't happen with Christine. That's so fascinating. Do you have a similar range during your ingressive singing?
I probably can't go as low. I can't go as
low. That's definitely a typical thing. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah,
go as high. So
there.
But I love it. It's so fun. You know, and I was also a French horn player.
Well, it's interesting. I think something that brass players might experience is pressure above the vocal folds,
mm-hmm.
sort of a back pressure. So the feeling of singing aggressively might not be so foreign to you.
It's not. It's not foreign at all.
Oh, that's so interesting. One of the issues with aggressive phonation is it might be great for a horn player and your bellows to do it, is that lung capacity limits the length of notes because you only have the length of the note is you have space in your lungs, right? But if you're used to being a barrel-chested brass player, then you might be able to more easily parse out your lung capacity to have a longer note. That's interesting. Well, we got to get you into a study.
Yeah, sure. What's also interesting is that I definitely have anxiety around performance, but aggressively, I'll do anything.
Wow.
It doesn't make me nervous at all.
You know, one of the things, and I didn't get into this earlier when we were talking about the uses of aggressive phonation, is that for some folks, they have psychological trauma around phonation, around voicing, and aggressive phonation is enough of a change for them that they actually prefer to speak aggressively.
Mm.
There are psychosomatic issues with phonation and speaking due to trauma or whatever. I mean, it can be a variety of situations, but aggressive phonation has helped people speak again. It's really a fascinating thing. And so to speak with you and you just enjoy doing it and it makes you feel more comfortable.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. I mean, I just have so much fun with it. I just love it. And people are always surprised. And it's interesting to when I talk to someone about it, because a lot of people are like, you're doing that inward? And I say, yeah. Or a vocal fry. That's inward. Yeah, that's inward. And they're like, really? What? And I know a lot. I am friends with a lot of beatboxers who use aggressive singing and
yes.
use aggressive sounds. And so when I'm with them, I'll do it with them. And they're always really surprised too. And they're like, I can't believe that that's in. I'm like, I don't know. I don't know why it is that way for me. I think maybe just because I've always played with it and I like it and I have fun doing it. So
yeah. That's really cool to hear. And I had this thought as I was studying it that I thought I was getting better throughout the study.
Mm-hmm.
So my results at first were like, well, the pressure and the resonance are comparative in this way. And then by the end of the study, I'm like, wait, all my earlier results are wrong because now I'm better at this technique. And so I think that honestly, more than the measurements we took, the interesting thing about the study is that I got better over the course of a month. And hearing you and how much better you are than I am at the technique, it's like, oh yeah, like that should be just this intuitive, obvious thing. The more you do it, the better it sounds and the better it feels. But it hasn't been sort of studied enough probably to know that. Do you ever perform entire songs aggressively?
No, or like practice a full song.
Yeah, like are there any songs that you've ever tried to perform completely aggressively? Or is it more just sort of goofing around?
Yeah, it's just goofing around and working on it. And I was in a show that I did, we were talking about me doing one of the flute solo from Celine Dion, Heart Will Go On.
Oh,
we had talked
yes.
about me doing the flute solo aggressively because it actually sounded way more like a flute. And it was, you know, so I was like, okay, I could do it aggressively, but I couldn't do the whole phrase. It was just too long of a phrase for me.
Right. Oh, shoot. I mean, you could release the first completely aggressive like album. Wow, that's so fun. I love that.
Yeah. So in your dissertation and in preparing all of your dissertation with aggressive phonation, what for you was the most interesting thing that you learned?
One thing that I thought was really interesting was that during aggressive phonation, the mucosal wave is reversed. So during outward phonation, egressive phonation, the vocal folds come together at the bottom edge of the vocal folds, then they contact in the middle, and then the upper edge. And if this were a visual medium, I would sort of demonstrate it with my hands. The bottom edge of the hands come together, then the middle, then the top, over and over again, you know, hundreds of times per second. But during inward phonation, the upper edge of the vocal folds come together first, then the middle, then the bottom, which to me just seems like such an interesting, quirky thing, and it totally impacts the way it sounds. And what that illuminated to me that I love is the flexibility and malleability of the vocal instrument. It is this fluid animal in our throats that can do so many fascinating things that we don't see. And you don't have to know that that's happening to be able to sing inwardly. You don't have to think, okay, and now I'm going to reverse my mucosal wave to be able to sing. It just happens naturally. And so when I think about all the cool sounds that we get to make as singers, and yeah, thinking about vocal percussion and all of these random noises that we make to communicate our humanity, like all of these tiny little micro movements with all these 40 some different muscles in our larynx, it's so fascinating that all these things just kind of happen automatically. And all we have to do is think about making a sound, and our larynx kind of rises to the occasion to do it. That to me might seem like a little thing. Well, yeah, obviously it's reverse. You're reversing the airflow, but I thought that was so, I thought it was really cute. Like, aw, you changed your wave pattern for me. Thanks. Thanks, voice.
It is. It's extraordinary how much this area can do and what we can do in exploring sounds. And the more that we explore and find, we're currently doing research with the company I'm involved with, the Academy of Noise, with the NYU Voice Center. And that's all doing beatboxing sound and a bunch of research around those sounds and trying to figure out how they're creating these sounds. So sounds are being produced. We can produce these sounds and we don't even know how we're doing it.
That's so extraordinary. Cool.
Yeah, it's so extraordinary. And this is an aspect of it that I just think absolutely should be involved, is this ingressive phonation. So,
so fascinating. You know, one other thing that kind of motivates me, I think in voice pedagogy, the voice researchers, whoever, the big we, whoever that is, tend to really fetishize this idea of efficiency, if that makes sense. Like, we get really into this idea of like, what is the most efficient way to produce the most resonant, beautiful sound that can sit on a pedestal in a museum somewhere? You know what I mean? And we get really interested in this sort of effortless production, which I totally understand. Like, that's how I learned to sing. But there are a lot of really cool sounds that we can make that are not efficient at all, that are very effortful, and that's okay. So what I love about studying things like inward singing is that it really doesn't make a lot of sense to focus on it so much, probably, except that sometimes it comes up naturally, like in vocal percussion, in beatboxing. It's this practical thing. Like, you're trying to create a continuous beat, and at some point you need oxygen. Mm-hmm. So why not use that moment of intaking oxygen as another way to create a cool sound? Mm-hmm. So that's to me what happens if you allow yourself to explore and do things that don't seem efficient and that seem really counterintuitive. You kind of like, that's where innovation happens, I think.
Yes, absolutely. Amazing. So I'm going to move on to my signature questions.
Right.
What is some advice that you would give to an aspiring young performer?
The thing that I started to realize at some point in my 20s is that there was no moment when someone was going to determine that I was officially an artist. That I was allowed to call myself an artist at any point, and that my choices were valid, and that there's always more for me to learn and more to know. We'll never get to the end of what we can learn. So I needed to stop waiting to feel like I knew everything, all the performance practice, all the history, all the repertoire, and just decide, okay, I'm an artist now and my choices are valid. So that's something that I would tell young artists and that I tell my young students, is that if they have an instinct about something, they don't need someone to validate that for them. They don't need an outside validation for their choices as an artist. Continue to learn, of course, that's just fun to do, but you're an artist when you decide you're an artist.
So important. What is something new about the voice that you learned this week?
I'm working with a flute player who's also a singer in like pop and rock bands. And sometimes in contemporary flute music, they're asked to sing while they play flute. And so we're learning about the ways in which the physicality of flute playing is contradictory to typical efficient vocal production, such as embouchure issues, tongue placement issues. To play the flute, you need to create so much pressure behind the air, and that requires kind of a more closed pharyngeal position. The embouchure requires, you know, maybe a higher jaw position than you might like. But what she's finding is that as we work on the voice, it's helping her to release some of her jaw tension while playing the flute. So we're trying to find the ways in which these two things can support each other, and that's been a really interesting journey.
Yeah. I understand that journey.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. And there are contemporary pieces where people sing into the horn. Have you had to do a lot of that?
No.
Okay. Yeah, that's...
I know there are... Because you can do two-tone where you're playing one and singing another.
Yes.
So I did like playing around with that a lot.
Oh, my God.
What are you currently learning?
I'm working on a piece by a composer named Tomas Oelio with my vocal quartet, Quince Ensemble. It uses a lot of whistling techniques, which is driving me crazy because I'm not good at whistling. And it uses this cool technique where it's sort of like almost a whistle sound, and then there's a tongue ram right at the end, like that kind of technique. And I'm practicing that technique, trying to get a really good tongue ram. And it's called Three Madrigals. We're recording it individually from our homes, and then I'm going to mix it together as a little quarantine track.
Nice. What do you wish you would have learned sooner?
I wish that I would have started composing and writing songs sooner. I got the idea during undergrad, because I used to write a bunch of songs and compose when I was growing up, and then I got to undergrad, and I got the idea that you were either a composer or a performer. And it turns out that happens a lot because it just takes a lot of time to either compose or perform, apparently. But I wish I would have started writing songs earlier. And now I've got a set of songs I'm going to start recording. So that's a sort of happy place that I'm at in my life where I'm composing again. But I do wish I would have started that sooner.
Amanda, thank you so much for being here. If the listeners want to get in touch with you, if they want to contact you, what would be the best way to do that?
You can do that through my website, amandadeboer.com. And I do get back in touch with people pretty quickly when I can. So that's a great way to get in touch with me. And I have some of my recordings up there. Need to update my website. But yeah, reach out if you have any questions about this or any other random thing.
Great. Thank you so much for nerding out with me about aggressive singing today. It was so fun talking to you. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. I really am so impressed by your aggressive phonation. Like you could be the world master of aggressive singing.
Maybe I'll record a song and
that makes me so happy.
Okay, I'll try. I'll try and I'll send it to you.
Perfect.
All right, amazing. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, please share it with those you know. You can also like, rate, and write a review. please feel free to check us out at www.theviscerlvoice.com. You can also find me on Instagram or Facebook under The Visceral Voice. Please join me in 2 weeks for another wonderful conversation on The Visceral Voice.